morning, Cascadia. Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, May 13th, 2016. And you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. Weather today and a little bit into, we're going to dip our toes into the weekend. This is Friday. This is the day they try an assortment of ersatz Hail Marys, running dubious, to say the least, legislation past us. This is traditionally the day that we find out what happened on Monday. And this is today, isolated showers and thunderstorms, perhaps later in the day after 5. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high near 89 and light and variable winds 5 to 7. It's been 5 to 7 all week. Tonight, scattered showers, thunderstorms, and 55 degrees, calm winds. Saturday, showers likely, possibly more. The continuing possibility of a thunderstorm hovering over us. And then high near 64, light winds. And for Saturday night, showers likely. Same thing, lows in the low 50s, light winds. Sunday, we still have the chance of showers, overcast skies, and a high around 64. And bringing us all the way around, full circle, Sunday night, again, showers persisting and lows around 53. That's it for your weather for today and throughout the weekend. Why do we do this? Because we do the weather because it is where we live. It is part of who we are. It actually is physically part of us, as is the rest of our habitat, which we are rapidly destroying at a brisk clip. We've got a lot of things in the news today, a lot of headlines. We've got angry birds. We've got people angry at the cormorants for eating salmon. And we have the Audubon Society angry at activists for scaring blue herons. These herons get scared for a day, and then they could go back to eating again. The cormorants are gone for good because they ate salmon. People shooting the cormorants completely forgetting they should be aiming a little bit upriver and trying to hit a dam. It's very unlikely that these people could in fact, hit a dam at 50 paces. And so they're going to focus on the cormorants instead. What a silly idea. Or, for that matter, find somebody eating a salmon burger and shoot them. I'm not advocating that, but just to make a point that shooting a cormorant in the name of salmon fishing seems like the silliest idea that's come down the river in a long time since they were shooting sea lions. It's a damn stupid, to paraphrase Bill Clinton. If it weren't so stupid, it would be funny, and it is. On that point, we go to more serious matters, but with anarchists, who always have a sense of humor. So it's great to speak with William, with a final straw. Good morning, William.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're great. We're so glad that we could get you on the show today, because
thank you. Likewise.
Oh, there's so much going on, and of course we are totally missed the 11th, which is the traditional day of action in solidarity with environmentalists and anarchists imprisoned for their actions in defense of the earth. Wow, what a great topic for the day.
For sure.
Oh,
actually, you haven't missed it yet because it's going to be on June 11th. So we have
it?
A little time left.
Oh, excuse me, I said, I don't think that we've done this on Air Cascadia before. So we haven't. So we're going to look forward to June 11th. And we are talking today, though, about Jeffrey Lewis and other people who have been jailed. These are America's political prisoners. There's a great many of them. All week we've been speaking about Leonard Peltier, who's been jailed for 50 plus years. He's very, very ill. He's old now. And he's in what? Wait for it. A maximum security prison? They're putting a 70-year-old guy in maximum security prison? All because police still have their hackles up about something that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, no, it's not... You don't really have to look very far in order to see the subterfuge that the law perpetrates and the police perpetrates against these folks. It's not because, you know, even somebody got shot, it's because they want to perpetrate oppression.
Oh, sure, and scare
people. Yeah, definitely. No, it's crazy.
It's a crazy world. Anarchists don't scare easily, because that's what anarchism is about, is thinking for oneself. And if you think for yourself, fear is not usually part of the equation. So I wanted to talk to you about toxic. There was what caught my eye. I think was Earth First had a part had an article about toxic prisons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to ask you to talk. What do you mean exactly by a toxic prison?
Oh, well, I believe you're referring to the campaign to fight toxic prisons, which is it's an organization of lots of different kinds of people, anarchist and leftist, and it coalesced to protest the building of a maximum security prison in Letcher County, Kentucky, which is historically, it's old coal country, it's very, very rural, people who live there are kind of routinely, you know, poor and disenfranchised, and that is where prisons eventually end up, it seems, in this country. And it just holds the, you know, it holds the population economically hostage, and it, you know, pollutes the environment a lot and disrupts the ecosystem and stuff like that. So the coalition itself is working in concert with a lot of different organizations, and one of them is the Abolitionist Law Center. The other one is the June 11th Committee, who is the committee who runs the support network for eco and anarchist prisoners every year, and that's been going, I think, since 2005. It's working in concert with a lot of different organizations, both anarchist and non-anarchist, and there are lots of different ways to get involved in this campaign, and one of those is you can go to a convergence that they're having in Washington, D.C. on June 11th this year. It's going to be June 11th through the 13th. There's a huge list of super comprehensive websites or workshops that are going to be happening in this convergence, and it's going to culminate in a protest out at BOP office in Washington, D.C. That's my understanding.
I'm guessing that this prison, this maximum security prison that the Bureau of Prisons is building, that since it's on top of a former mountaintop removal coal mine, I would guess that nothing else could be built there. How did they get around restrictions on building large facilities full, packed with human beings on an area that would be likely, they would be, for example, if they wanted to put in condos, they wouldn't be allowed to do that.
That's a really good question. And I, unfortunately, am not all that knowledgeable about how these things have gotten organized as far as the Bureau of Prisons is going. But this prison is in some kind of stage of approval. So I think that there's some sort of environmental document that either is in some sort of process of approval or disapproval. And I understand that people who are working with the campaign to fight toxic prisons are systematically attacking the environmental document in order to make the prison more difficult to build. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I have no idea. I mean, prisons are routinely built on government Superfund sites, meaning sites that are so toxic that nothing can really live there.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
just
about.
On, yeah.
So this is it's an environmental justice nightmare. It really is.
It is,
as far as environmental justice is concerned, this would probably be one of the big. This is, of course, a test case example. But as you said, there's other prisons are built on the sites that would otherwise not be inhabitable. First, they should never have got to that condition in the first place. And usually it's on account of fossil fuels, mining for fossil fuels or coal. So, people don't usually, if it were condos. If it were, say, green condos, everybody would be up in arms. It would be all over the front page. But because it's a prison and it's housed with, it's full of prisoners, the general public doesn't really care. First, they don't care about it being toxic. And second, they don't care about putting prisoners in these conditions. Do you have any? What is the evidence that these type citing prisons on brownfields and other otherwise uninhabitable land left over from fossil fuel mining and so forth? People have been sickened, and there are numbers, and it's possible to get those numbers and more and more. Do you have any notion of people what the numbers are as far as people that have been sick and?
Oh, that's a very good question. I don't personally have numbers, but I know that the numbers are very high. And it's interesting that you brought up the issue of fossil fuels, because it's been shown, at least in some anarchist analysis of prisons and analyses that have come out of the Abolitionist Law Center and even the Southern Poverty Law Center, that the extraction industry and the prison industry go hand in hand. They exploit the earth in the same ways. They exploit people in similar ways. They expose people to high levels of toxic substances. And in West Virginia, recently, there was an informal volunteer group went into a prison in West Virginia that was highly impacted by coal runoff into their water supply, and they were doing some interview studies with prisoners, and nearly everybody had been negatively affected, and nearly everybody was being denied medical treatment. And I think that the general public, as far as prisons go in this country, it's a really interesting time right now, because there have been, at least in liberal media, I think, more discussion of the prison industrial complex and way more exposure to prisons. And the United States is the leading incarcerator in the entire world. I think that people generally don't really understand that. But we have more than 1% of our population in prison, which sounds like a low number, but is actually a very, very, very high amount of people, and routinely people are people of color and poor people and people on the LGBT spectrum and the intersections between all of those identities and ethnicities. So I think that, I think it's, good to still be talking about prison, and good to talk as much as you can about prison with literally everyone you can get your hands on. And I find that people are generally pretty receptive to talking about the ways in which prison ruins people's lives, and no matter who you are, really, it's never a cakewalk.
Go ahead. I think that prisons too are probably the most dangerous place for anyone from the LGBT community. Recently, with all of the discussion in mainstream media about bathrooms and quite young people who already are pretty fragile, anyhow, it's like if a high school student who's trans is faced with this kind of massive amount of politicization of the issue over something that should be very simple and very obvious, It's got to be a terrifying, the prospect of, if high school is terrifying, and of course it is, and it's very similar to prison in many ways, but a prison must be the most dangerous place. And there are no protections. That would be one toxic example of toxicity in prisons would be the conditions for other prisoners from the hetero community. It's bad enough, but for everybody else, it's almost a death sentence.
Absolutely. And there are some pretty horrifying statistics about the amount of at least transgender people who are in prison. There's a documentary called Cruel and Unusual, which is really, really quite upsetting, just to give a warning to your listeners if you're thinking about watching it.
I've seen it, and I had to turn it off and stop a little bit. Yeah, it's a very difficult film to watch.
Yeah, and there's a statistic that is presented in that movie, which is or in that documentary, which says that 2 out of 3 trans